with information on the latest developments in assistive technology and initiatives from the studios of 2RPH in Sydney. RPH Australia brings you AbleQuest. Hello, I'm Marnie Roper. Taking public transport has never been easy for people with disabilities, but our guest today tells us how Transport for New South Wales is addressing these challenges for its customers. Gail Lebransky, the Director for Social Policy, who is driving this effort for the department, joined us in the studio. Barbara Sullivan asked her for a brief overview of the range of projects currently underway at Transport for New South Wales.
Transport for New South Wales is undergoing once-in-a-generation infrastructure building.
We'd noticed.
Look, it's probably a struggle for the people of Sydney at the moment, but at the end of the construction period, we will have world-class public transport in New South Wales. Some of the key projects are the light rail, which is obviously very visible in the CBD. It'll extend right out to the eastern suburbs from Circular Quay through George Street, up through Surry Hills and onwards to the eastern suburbs. We also have significant new metro building. The northwest section of the Sydney Metro is due for completion next year with 9 new stations. There are some new stations under development in the CBD, notably at Central and Martin Place. That extension to the line also includes new stations in Crow's Nest and will eventually extend right through the Bankstown line.
With all those projects underway, how do you ensure in your role that access and inclusion are a priority in planning?
Look, I think we've really revolutionised the way we do transport planning in New South Wales, where access is a consideration right from the beginning of projects. Yes. Certainly, access for all, no exceptions, is one of the core objectives of Future Transport 2056. So that's enabled us to take a look at the requirements for all customers, not just peak commuters in the development of transport projects. So if we take something like the Sydney Metro, which I believe will be a lighthouse project for access in the world, really, we started off with a benchmarking exercise where we looked at what would be required to make this new metro project fully accessible. And very early on, we started sharing information about the aspirations for Sydney Metro with people with disabilities. So they got to see the concepts, they got to understand what we were looking for in roll-on, roll-off access and state-of-the-art customer information. That project has obviously fairly significantly evolved, so we've taken them from concept through to pre-delivery, where people with disability and older people have had the opportunity to walk on board mock-ups of the trains, to have a look at mock-ups of the stations, and to provide feedback to us on how they work for them. If your listeners are interested, they should send us an email at atac@transport.nsw.gov.au. Provide us with their contact details and the nature of their disability. And when we need to speak to someone with that kind of disability, we'll most certainly be in touch. We'd certainly welcome their feedback. Similarly, we've introduced a new ferry fleet to Harbour City Ferries, 7 new ferries, and that was really the first time we developed this concept through to delivery process of working with people with disabilities. And in that project, there actually were some changes made, fairly significant changes from the point of view of a person with disability, where in order to have a functional wheelchair accessible toilet on board, it's a double decker ferry, we had to move the stairs marginally in order to make that interior space of the toilet much more functional. We've also been able to put wheelchair spaces on the outer decks of the ferry. So as a result of the consultation and the prior planning, those ferries now feature accessible onboard information and audio announcements, so everyone gets the benefit of Sydney Harbour. We've also been working with our partners, Roads and Maritime Services, on wharf development and ensuring that real-time information is also available on wharves with audio buttons that people can use.
It's an end-to-end thing, isn't it? It's not just the particular mode of transport that you have to consider. It's access to the bus stops, to the ferry wharves and so on.
Absolutely. I think more and more in thinking about access, we're thinking about whole-of-journey accessibility. Mm. And we know that if one point in the trip chain is broken, then it becomes an inaccessible journey. One of the things that we've been looking at with the buses, where we've got 88% of our buses are low-floor wheelchair accessible, we're much more conscious now about the need to work with local government to improve not only the bus stop, but the access paths to and from the bus stops.
So the time that takes for somebody in a wheelchair, for example, to get onto the train, onto the bus, I imagine that you've got to think about timetables.
Not necessarily. Mm. Our service is becoming more and more turn up and go. The timetable becomes less essential. And we do have a policy that if a person needs access, we will take the time to assist them to board, whether that's on a bus, on a ferry, or on the rail system.
That's very reassuring. So are there any particular assistive technologies that you've employed in the planning of all the modes of transport?
It's interesting with assistive technologies because the more you make the conveyance accessible, the less you require them. And, you know, for example, if you have real-time travel information available through apps and if you have onboard announcements, the less you require any kind of assistive technology. We have been focused to a certain extent on how we can help people who are blind or vision impaired navigate through station environments, which are obviously very congested and, you know, they're complex environments that are difficult to navigate. We have trialled some Bluetooth navigation, but I think at this point in time, because the technology is evolving very rapidly, we're kind of leveraging off work that's being done by some of the market leaders like Google and Microsoft and waiting for their next development, how we can actually integrate their programs into the rail environment. And they're very keen to partner with us, obviously. Bluetooth, while it's useful, is very costly to implement and is rapidly being overtaken by other kinds of technology. So it's a bit of wait and see, really. We also work with a lot of third-party app developers. We have an open data policy and have had one since 2016 in Transport for New South Wales. So that basically allows lots of people who are much smarter, much more tech savvy and much more innovative than people within Transport for New South Wales to use our data to come up with solutions that really work for customers. That's basically led to a proliferation of real-time travel apps. Yeah. Some examples which might be of interest to your listeners are TripView, TripGo, TripTastic, NextThere, MetaRove. And importantly, we don't actually recommend any particular app to our customers. They are tools that are out there in the community to use. And it's really a little bit of seeing what's out there, having a look, seeing whether it meets your needs. Often the app developers are very keen to interact with users to see how well they work. And
yes, I imagine
it can provide feedback, but we're not really in the business of developing apps ourselves. We are also interested in how apps can help with direct assistance to people with disability and older people. You'll be aware that the population is ageing very rapidly and dementia is a big issue in the community and lots of people are out and about in the early stages of dementia. And obviously, station environments can be quite challenging for people with any kind of cognitive impairment or sensory impairment. So we're keen to build on some existing customer apps that are used in other environments, which allow for two-way conversations and would enable a person with disability to signal to station staff that they need assistance or alert our staff to the fact that they've arrived at a station. This is obviously in very preliminary exploration stages. That kind of opportunity to get help when you need it is a key area that we're looking at. which is really about meeting the specific needs of people with disability as opposed to making general transport information accessible to people with disability.
And that's what inclusion is all about, isn't it?
Absolutely.
What schemes are in place to help people with disabilities? For example, the taxi transport subsidy scheme and so on. Could you talk about those?
We believe that schemes should be a last resort. We'd prefer to see these sorts of programs as first mile, last mile services or services for those who are particularly frail or have very significant disabilities, because really our job is about ensuring that public transport is accessible to all. But we do have the taxi transport subsidy scheme, and that scheme has increased since the review of point-to-point services. We've lifted the available trip payments from $30 to $60 per trip. And we have also lifted what we call the lift fee, which is the incentive payment to drivers for the extra time it takes for them to load a person using a wheelchair in a wheelchair accessible taxi. We are currently reviewing the taxi transport subsidy scheme, which was a recommendation of the previous point-to-point review. And, you know, one of the terms of reference of that review, which is yet to be completed, is looking at the opportunities to open that scheme to other providers. So, in a sense, people with disability have the same access to market competition that's come from new players in the market like Uber as everybody else in the community. We also have the New South Wales Community Transport Program, which is not a disability-specific program. It's really about addressing transport disadvantage. The community transport, which was associated with the home and community care program, has shifted to the NDIS, so Transport for New South Wales doesn't have any direct involvement.
Now, with so many visitors in town, people with disabilities for the Invictus Games, it's probably a very good chance to get some feedback on how effective you are being with your transportation efforts.
Well, we certainly believe that good transport contributed to the success of the Invictus Games, and Sydney compares very favourably in terms of access with other global cities like London, New York, Paris. From the point of view of the Invictus Games themselves, we ran extra train services out to Olympic Park, and that obviously helped spectators get there and families. We also had 7 SDA buses where we removed the seats and we used those buses to ship competitors from 18 different countries. And certainly the feedback that we've had from those services has been great.
When the light rail is finished, will it be easy for people with disabilities to use light rail?
Look, all of our new infrastructure programs, there's a commitment to full accessibility.
Great.
Both the light rail and the new metro services will be roll-on, roll-off. Obviously, on a light rail service, the floor height of a tram can change depending on whether it's fully loaded or lightly loaded, but most of the time most people should be able to access those services independently.
And is there anything on your accessibility wish list that you, as a Director of Social Policy, would like to see?
Oh, obviously Redfern Station is top of the wish list. Obviously that station is at the heart of a very large development precinct from Everleigh through to Central and is a key part of the network, so we see it as critically important.
I have just been speaking with Gail Labransky, Director of Social Policy at Transport for New South Wales.
You have just been listening to AbleQuest, a program that looks at developments in assistive technology. From Barbara Sullivan and Marnie Roper, thank you for listening and goodbye till next program.